One of the biggest names in horror fiction is Anne Rice. Anne Rice and her son Christopher Rice are both best-selling authors with new novels out. They've been visiting bookstores across the country, occasionally doing signings together. Recently, they were in Lexington for an appearance, and they dropped by WKY Studios for a chat about these new works and their craft. Christopher Rice's book is called The Heavens Rise, and it's a supernatural thriller. Anne Rice has written on a variety of subjects, from Christianity to erotica, but she's perhaps best known for her horror series, The Vampire Chronicles, which introduced to the world the vampire Lestat. Her latest book is called The Wolves of Midwinter. It's the second book in the Wolf Gift Chronicles, and it's about werewolves.
It's very rare that we have two best-selling authors come in at the same time and that they're both related.
Right. We've done stage events and we've done straight signings in both, and it's a lot of fun.
You know, for the past five books, I've been doing mysteries and what I call terrestrial thrillers, and The Heavens Rise is my first supernatural thriller, so it made sense for us to go on tour. So I am recruiting a lot of her readers who weren't really interested in the more sort of down here on earth stuff I was doing.
And let me start off by asking you a little bit about your writing process, because I'm always fascinated when I get a chance to talk with authors, what it is that they do to get in that place where they're writing. And I wondered if you could describe the space, if you have a comfortable space that you like to
write. I do. Actually, it's very simple. I have one room in my small family home that's been converted to an office, and it's lined with books, and it has a little tripod bay window open on the front of the house. And I can shut the door to the hallway, and when I do, I shut out the whole house and the world, and I sit down at my desk, and I have three 30-inch monitors shielding me from all distractions, and a Logitech keyboard attached to my Mac, and I sink into my own world, and I go. I sort of have to be at that place, that desk, that station, with that door shut to do it. I envy Christopher because I think he can write a novel on a laptop in a cafe, and I can't really do that. I need to be in that place. And it's usually late morning and afternoon that I write. I really write really well at night, but I can't take the night schedule anymore. It's just too hard on my health. So it's usually all afternoon and early evening with regular breaks for meals, of course.
Do you keep props around, interesting things to look at?
The office itself is filled with all kinds of things that pertain to what I'm doing, mainly books, stacks of books and papers and some photographs and so forth. And I do go out and look for sort of sacred objects that pertain to the novel I'm writing, and special things, you know. And I have gifts, too, lined up on the desk, things that people have given me, special pens for notes. My lucky frogs, I have a lot of golden frogs given to me by friend Eric Shaw Quinn, and I keep those little frogs around. But otherwise, you know, it's pretty much all happening in the mind and on that machine.
Do you keep a lot of notes around as well? Because you have a lot of characters that move from book to book and things like that. Do you keep notes for those kind
of
things?
I do. I do keep notes. And it helps a lot to have the three monitors, because I can bring the notes up on one monitor from a Word document, and I can be looking at those notes while I'm writing on the central monitor. It took me years to get used to that, working with three monitors, but it's really quite simple. Very worth the investment.
Where did your attraction to supernatural themes come into play? When did that happen?
I was always attracted to supernatural stories from the time I was a little child, and I don't think that's something writers choose. I think you're just responding to the feelings you have when you hear a story and you write one. And with me, the supernatural is where the intensity is. That's where I feel most comfortable. I feel most normal when writing a supernatural story.
Well, you've had the fortune of living in some really interesting places. I mean, you grew up in New Orleans, and a place that has a great tradition and history, and then in the San Francisco area as well, which has also got a very interesting and colorful history. Mm-hmm. And a good place for supernatural things. I mean, there's a lot of ghosts and a lot of tragedy that's happened in both
places. Well, I'm very sensitive to atmosphere and architecture, and New Orleans has some of the most beautiful houses in the United States and the most beautiful trees, and it's a beautiful place to grow up. San Francisco has another kind of beauty, very beautiful, beautiful Victorian houses and whole streets and blocks of just wall-to-wall old houses that have been renovated and refurbished and repainted. But, you know, I don't know if that really makes me the writer I am because thousands of people have grown up in the same place and they haven't become writers. So mm-hmm. I don't know why I was always kind of stoned on the beauty of these places and sort of staggering around making up stories about the houses and loving the tradition and the history and the ghost stories and folk tales of these various cities. I really don't know what it's all about. I think storytelling in a way is in my blood. It's in Christopher's blood. It's the Irish Catholic background. It's the Southern background. Everybody in the South knows how to tell a story. If you don't, they kick you out.
Well, you mentioned the architecture, and it's interesting because I think sometimes storytelling is a piece of architecture. And I know that architecture plays an important part in the structure of the places in your stories and everything, that's an important part. And also, I noticed on your website you enjoyed Lexington's architecture.
Yes, I did. You know, I've refurbished houses and redecorated them myself. I've given a lot of money to preservation because I believe in it. I've supported it. I've restored houses. I'll write letters to save houses when they're endangered. I'll do whatever I can. Again, I don't know why everybody isn't crazy about beautiful old houses. And driving into Lexington, I saw wonderful houses and immediately started thinking of ways to use what I was seeing in a novel in some way. You know, even if I can't come back to Lexington for the plot, maybe I can maybe I can have a hero that passes through Lexington, spends a night in a mysterious three-story house.
I noticed in exchange one of your fans on there noted that Lexington wasn't a southern city because you mentioned that it was a beautiful southern city, and they were like, oh, it's not southern. I just want to say for the record that if you're born and raised in Lexington, it's a southern city.
It's a southern city. Yeah. I knew that. I watched Justified. I know
sure.
Kentucky is a southern
state. Oh, of course.
State.
Of course. Yeah, I think some people who aren't from around here.
Yeah.
And depending on your outlook on things, you know, it could be. It's actually probably the northernmost southern city.
Yeah, yeah, but it's a southern city.
Yes.
Sure. But they have grits on the menu at the hotel.
Of course. Yeah.
That's the first encounter I've had with grits in years.
So, Werewolves, The Wolf Gift, and this is the new series. Of course, people were familiar with your vampire novels, The Vampire Chronicles. And I understand that werewolves were something that you kind of were reluctant to get into at first.
Right? The idea was suggested by a friend, a TV producer, Jeff Easton. He produces White Collar and Graceland, two shows for TNT. And I emailed Jeff. I've never met him, but we email. And he emailed me once about werewolves. He said he just watched a special on werewolves. And he said, if you ever tackle that subject, I will buy the book. And I don't know why, but that email came right at a time when I was dissatisfied with what I was writing. And I thought, well, why don't I do this? My sister, Alice Borchard, had written three werewolf novels. But Alice did something very different with the theme, and I thought this was something Alice wouldn't mind at all. If she was still with us, I don't think she would be unhappy at all that I was doing it in a different way. So I sat down and wrote a TV treatment first for The Wolf Gift, and it was about 40 pages, and I really loved it. And then I thought, I want to see this grow into a novel. And I started writing about Reuben, and his story started unfolding, and what I had to do with it, of course, was make it interesting to me. I had to change the cosmology and the cliches
mm-hmm.
to make it more exciting. And I made Reuben a very romantic young man and by nature, sort of a poet and a dreamer and a writer who hoped to write great novels someday. He gets the wolf gift, and when he experiences the change, it's sensuous for him, and he's completely conscious as Reuben when he changes into this great big powerful man wolf that can climb walls and has retractable claws like a cat so that it can climb trees and hears the sound of evil out there in the night. He hears the sound of evil voices and people doing evil and people crying for help. And he feels drawn to those situations and he intervenes, stops a rapist. And for him, it seems that the change has come on him because of those voices out there. The need has produced the change in him. And he gets to observe all this, meditate on it, talk about it, and that's what made it interesting to me. I just did not find some of the old werewolf material that interesting.
Well, so much of the monster mythology is that it's a curse, and mm-hmm. you turn it on its head as a gift.
Yes.
And essentially the man-wolf instead of a wolf-man
right.
is kind of a superhero.
He is a superhero. He's a comic book superhero, and he becomes that in Northern California as he goes around, you know, solving crimes, really, and rescuing school kids who were kidnapped. He becomes a comic book hero to the people of Southern California, and they start printing Northern California, and they start printing shirts, T-shirts, and sweatshirts, and printing up mugs with his image on it, and saying, "Save the man wolf, protect the man wolf from the police," and all of that sort of thing, while he's being hunted, of course, by the police who want to catch him, and some scientists, some evil scientists who want to catch him, too.
So by the end of the first book, he's found some other like wolves.
Yes, the elders of the tribe have come to help him.
Yes, and maybe you can describe the Morphinkinder.
Well, Morphinkinder is what they call themselves, the children of change, or changing children. And the elders show up, and they do help Reuben at a pivotal moment, and they reveal some of the origins. But there's some question about whether they're really telling him the truth about the origins. And they certainly haven't told him, by the end of the book, I don't think they've told him the whole truth. By any stretch.
Are they all, you know, men wolves, or are they all?
No, there are some women related to their pack or their group. And in book two, The Wolves of Midwinter, the women appear. And the women, and any woman can become one of these creatures, too. I don't know whether you'd call her a woman wolf or a she wolf, but she can be bitten and change. And when the women change, there's not very much difference between them and the men, which creates a bit of a problem. You know, it sort of equalizes the playing field.
The book is The Wolves of Midwinter. Anne Rice is with us right now. And this book, you seem to have created a new genre, Yuletide horror fiction.
Well, thank you for the compliment. But actually, I think Yuletide horror fiction has always existed.
Christmas carols,
yeah,
a ghost story.
Yeah, sure. In Victorian England, ghost stories appeared every Christmas in the major periodicals. And when we go back in English history, we find that the Feast of Midwinter was a time when people believed ghosts walked. And they also liked to dress up in animal skins and act like they were beasts. This was very deep in English tradition, that you go out and you cavort in the forest at that time of year, because the old pagan customs of midwinter had to do with renewal and sacrifice and trying to woo the sun to come back, the spring and the summer to come back. And Christmas, of course, was beautifully, I think, and synchronistically imposed on that feast. The idea of the Lord coming in the form of a child, the light of the world coming into the world. And it worked beautifully for the Christian church, but there's a continuity. And I had a lot of fun in this book exploring that as these men wolves decide to celebrate Yule. They decide, first off, to have a huge Christmas banquet and party and festival for all their human neighbors who don't know what they are. And then also to go off into the forest on Christmas Eve and have their own bonfire and their own somewhat savage rituals, Dionysian rituals.
So if this is a TV series, this would be the Christmas episode.
That would be the Christmas. It was inspired directly by the Christmas episode of Downton Abbey.
Oh,
that's
no,
what
yeah.
made me want to do it. Christmas at Nideck Point, like Christmas at Downton Abbey. Only Nideck Point is a very different place from Downton Abbey.
Well, it'll certainly make it nice for the holidays coming up and everything to have a new Christmas story, a new
sure.
gothic Christmas story.
Yeah, if you're
story.
A horror fan, and here's mm-hmm. a Christmas horror novel.
Exactly. Well, you've written about vampires. You've written about werewolves. Who wins that battle?
Written about vampires and werewolves. Well, my vampires are mythic characters, mm-hmm. you know. They would win any battle with anybody. And they could wipe out some of these little modern vampires that have been coming around, you know, in the last few years.
I'm Joe Conkright. We're talking with Anne Rice. Do you still hope this becomes a TV series?
Well, I don't know. We've had a lot of interest in TV. I wouldn't mind seeing it as a movie. But on the other hand, I love television, and I think we're in sort of a golden age of television now with shows like Game of Thrones and Merlin and Camelot, and I mean just a million different fantasy shows springing, not a million, but many fantasy shows
many
springing
good
up.
Ones
really high production values for these shows. So if this could be a great series, that would be wonderful. Who would turn down HBO today, you know, after Game of Thrones?
Have you ever seen a ghost or experienced a supernatural
never.
event?
I have never seen a ghost. I have lived in a haunted house. The ghost never said boo to me. Never. I walked around that house all hours of the night in New Orleans, and I tell you what I have met. I've met a lot of people in New Orleans who have seen ghosts,
yeah.
but I have not seen one.
Do you believe it, you think? The possibility?
Well, I tell you, there's a lot of data out there, credible testimony from people about ghosts have seen. It's been gathered by professors and researchers and people studying ghosts. I wouldn't rule it out. I mean, I've read some amazing stories of true encounters with ghosts and angels, for that matter. There's a growing literature of people who claim to be saved in accidents from angels. And, you know, they walk into the woods in winter and they get saved by a mysterious angel who leads them to the road. And otherwise they would have frozen to death. And I don't know. I don't discount any of it. I just know it has never happened to me. I've never had that consolation of having the veil lifted and seeing a bright light behind the veil. Just hasn't happened.
I was wondering what kind of music you enjoy.
Like what kind of music I enjoy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I enjoy a whole lot from Bon Jovi to Tina Turner. I listen to different bands at different times. I've been listening to Bon Jovi every morning for the last year.
Really?
Sometimes Tina Turner, Secret Agent album. Then I go back to Linda Ronstadt a lot. And, of course, I love all forms of classical music and Baroque. And
do you ever listen to music when you write?
No, it interrupts
the
rhythm.
It's hard, isn't it?
Can't do it. It gets me high. It's
even
intoxicating.
Instrumental, like in the background.
No, I'll listen to it separately. Like in The Wolf Gift, there's a point where they listen to Eric Satie. Well, I went and listened, you know, before writing that. And, by the way, Mary Fall, the lead singer who used to work with the October Project, she is mentioned in Wolves of Midwinter. And when she found out that I mentioned her and the October Project, she wrote a song to go with Wolves of Midwinter. She wrote a beautiful song called Exiles. It's now available on iTunes, and it's on the audiobook of Wolves of Midwinter. And Mary Fall has one of the most unique voices in popular music. Beautiful voice.
When shadows fall and the fires burn, the forest calls to me that I must return. The night becomes primal.
It's everywhere now. It's on YouTube, iTunes, everywhere.
It's called Exiles.
Exiles.
Okay.
Wolves of Midwinter. I think that's the full title.
I notice you are very active on Facebook. I'm impressed with that. Are you also on Twitter and things like that?
Well, my posts automatically go to Twitter.
Okay.
But I usually stay on Facebook on my page.
Mm-hmm.
I love the page. I love the people of the page.
Like interacting with
your
fans.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can ask them any question. If I'm stuck on something or if I'm wondering about something, you know, if I'm just feeling, I don't know, looking back on my life, I'll ask them a question. Which of my books did you like the least? Which did you like the most? Why? You know, and they give me wonderful answers. I'll get thousands of generous, eloquent answers. It's
quite great. That instant connectivity with your audience has got to be a big change from when you started writing and everything where it was just you wrote something. Then you'd see people at signings and things like that. But now you're with them all the time.
Well, yeah. Years ago, before the internet, and even in the very early days of the internet, I think I was very isolated. I remember I had an experience I'll never forget. I was on tour for Queen of the Damned, which was my first number one New York Times bestseller. And I was in a hotel in Seattle, I think, and this reporter walked in and he says, "The internet has declared this book a failure." And I remember I was just devastated. And I didn't know how to go on the internet, and I didn't know what he was talking about. And I can't tell you how loud that voice loomed over me for years to come. Today, you can just go on the internet and find out for yourself that that's not true, that there are many people responding to a book positively, just as there are some people responding negatively. But I can't explain to you how isolated I was at that time. And when he said that, how jarring that was. The internet has declared the book a failure. I didn't know what to say, you know, but I never forgot it. And I'm glad that writers don't live in that kind of isolation now. I'm glad that you can immediately check for yourself when someone makes such a statement to you and see the great spectrum of voices out there talking about your work. It's great. It's great.
I know you are a lover of language. Do you have a favorite word?
Well, my husband thought entity was the most beautiful word in the English language, so I love entity. I love the word crystalline.
Crystalline. You know, that's a beautiful word.
I love
word.
The word magnificent. Mm. It's beautiful.
What's the best Christmas gift that you remember receiving? Is there one you can think back to?
I think the best Christmas gift I ever got as a child was a chess set, a beautiful chess set with each figure distinctly carved as a human being. I had seen it downtown in a department store, and my father gave it to me for Christmas. And we read a book together on playing chess, and we played chess on Christmas Day. And I never forgot that. It was great.
That's a beautiful memory.
Yeah.